Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show with one of my absolute favorites from the great state of Oklahoma, James Hale. Of course, he is the senior writer with OU Insider and 1400 KREF right there in Norman, Oklahoma. I should also add, James, we enjoyed watching you as a contributor on the recent 30 for 30 documentary on ESPN on Marcus Dupree. You did a great job on The Best That Never Was.
Well, that was a great honor for me. First of all, it is always great, you know, when you're a reporter like myself and you cover a beat like OU, that you develop relationships with athletes, no matter what their star status is or how long they've been there or what, you know, what they accomplished. Like yourself, E, you and I are great friends, but I enjoyed covering you at OU.
Thanks.
And, you know, when that player, which Marcus did, he told the producers, hey, if you're going to interview a reporter, you've got to go interview James Hale. And that is really the most important thing about that whole story to me, was that Marcus thought enough of me and remembered how I covered him fairly and what he thought was fairly and ethically and things, that, you know, he told him, hey, go get James's perspective on this. Second of all, I never dreamed that so many people would watch it. I get so many people every day that come up to me and go, hey, great job on this, and they want to talk about Marcus Dupree. And the good thing for Marcus is that he's been welcomed back at Oklahoma with open arms, not only by the football program, but by the fans around the state. They saw a different side of him. They realized that he did feel like he made a mistake and that he should have stayed at OU. So that has been turned out to be a great 2 hours for me. And I guess ESPN claims it's the most watched 30-30 feature that they've had. So that is a great piece of history that I'm going to be a part of, and I'm proud of it. And there's a lot of good things that have come from it.
When you were asked to do this particular documentary, what was the one thing you wanted the viewer to take away from?
Well, I wasn't sure. You know, when somebody asks you to do a feature like this, that the director or the producer, they have an idea how they're going to tell the story, and they're going to try to slant questions, and they're trying to find information towards what they are trying to portray in this story. It's not always reality with the story. It's whatever they're trying to portray in the story. I knew I was going to talk about Marcus's year and how great of a player that he was and the impact that he had on the year, and it was a magical year. But I was also hoping to talk about how Marcus wasn't very dedicated to his craft, that Marcus, Marcus, if he had just been as dedicated as most of his teammates, if he had really wanted to be a good player, would understand what work ethic, was, things would have turned out better. If Coach Switzer hadn't tried to coddle him like he did, instead of treating him like he did all other players, including Billy Sims and some of the greatest players of all time, instead he did try to coddle him a little bit, and Barry admits that he didn't handle him wrong. And even when he tried to get on him, you could just tell it wasn't the reality. He wasn't being real with it and that kind of thing. So I think there's a lot of things with it. Now, how it turned out and what they did ask and what eventually was portrayed, I thought they did a good job with it. There's another hour and 45 minutes or hour and 50 minutes of our interview that's on the cutting room floor somewhere. And when I talked to Coach Switzer about it, I told him, I said, well, they didn't put in my thoughts on how, you know, you tried the best you could and how Marcus really didn't treat you fairly either. And he said, well, that's all right, you know, and I mean, because he understood how the production was going to be portrayed. So there's a lot of dynamics to Marcus's year at OU, or year and a half, year and a quarter at OU that were at work at that particular time. And it's just one of the rare instances under Coach Switzer that it didn't work out with a player.
Oklahoma throughout the years has produced so many outstanding running backs. Where does Marcus rank in your mind?
Well, just athletically, on pure talent alone, he's one of the top one or two, maybe the best that's ever come through OU. But because he wasn't here long enough, and because just the shortness and the dynamics of what really happened to him, you can't rank him in the top five. I recently did this on my board at OUinsider.com, and I recently said we basically did a five, and I ended up doing a top 10. And it's really hard to do at OU because there's so many great running backs. See, it's unbelievable. But you do have those that most people would agree stand above. And I think the most talented running back ever to play at OU, here's what I did. I ranked Joe Washington number one. He was my favorite. He was incredibly talented. I don't think there's ever been another running back like him that could run just as fast backwards or sideways as they could forward. He was a great special teams guy. He was a great blocker, great pass receiver. I ranked him number one. I ranked Billy Sims number two. I think every time OU recruits a running back and they're supposed to be great, I ask, is he as good as Billy Sims? Billy had everything. Billy was a whirling dervish. He was a tornado running through there. He had thighs as strong, as big as tree trunks. He was a 4.45 guy. He could bench press 360 pounds. He was fearless. He was a great blocker. And I always rank him number two. I think that then I rank Steve Owens number three. Now, Steve won the Heisman Trophy in 69. The most durable back maybe in college football history, carrying the ball 40 times a game. And a guy that, averaged 6 yards a carry. Just a tremendous player. And so I always rank him number three, and I always rank Greg Pruitt number four. Now, Barry Switzer will tell you Greg Pruitt's the best running back he ever coached. And so, see, I've got Billy, I've got Joe, and I've got Greg Pruitt of the Switzer era, and Switzer says the best running back he ever coached was Greg Pruitt. So that's pretty amazing right there in itself. And then I put Billy Vessels number five. Billy played in the Bud Wilkinson era, won the Heisman Trophy in 56, a guy that had 9.4 speed in the 100 meters, was a 300-pound bench press guy, they say. I don't know how they lifted weights back then or what kind of weight room they had. Was a great defensive back as well. So, see, I've just named five guys, and I haven't even put Marcus Dupree in there. I haven't put Adrian Peterson in there. I haven't put Elvis Peacock in there. I haven't put Mike Gattis in there. You see what I mean? It's impossible. I haven't put DeMond Parker in there. So it's almost impossible to do something like this, but that's the legacy at OU, their great running back tradition, and boy, do they have a great one.
Absolutely, James. You go through the list of Billy and Steve Owens and Greg Pruitt, but none of those guys had Joe's silver shoes.
No, they didn't. And Joe got away with silver shoes. Wasn't Coach Switzer great?
Yes.
You could wear bandanas if you were Thomas Lott. You could wear silver shoes if you're Joe Washington. You could have the towel in the front of the back like Elvis Peacock did. And you could wear T-shirts around campus saying hello on the front, goodbye on the back if you're Greg Pruitt. Barry was just one of a kind, one of the greatest coaches of all time. People are critical of him because he ran such a fun program and he lived such a fun life. I just thought it was great. Hey, if you can do it and get away with it, you need to do it and get away with it. And that was the rock and roll era of OU sports with Billy Tubbs in basketball and Stan Abel in wrestling and Enos Seymour in baseball. And it was a great time to be in school at OU.
We are talking Sooner sports, Sooner football right now this weekend on the Big East Sports Show with the senior writer from OU Insider and 1400 KREF. You can listen to him online. And, before we talk about really, James, it's hardly been a quiet offseason right now in terms of college football. There's been so many scandals. We're going to talk about that here momentarily, but kind of give us an update on there's been so much tragedy that has happened right now up in Norman, Oklahoma over the past couple of weeks. Oklahoma losing their senior linebacker in Austin Box. Give us a pulse on that situation.
I already miss Austin. Austin was a great kid, a great guy, a tremendous high school athlete, one of the great athletes that's ever come out of Oklahoma. Led Enid to a state championship game in football, led him to a national appearance in the national tournament in high school baseball. Austin was such a good player that he was going to start as a redshirt freshman. He got hurt as a freshman, was going to start as a redshirt freshman, and then he got hurt. Travis Lewis emerged, so all Austin did was learn all three positions, and when somebody got hurt, Brent Venables didn't hesitate to put him in, even though he'd never played linebacker before. Austin was just a good guy. Austin was one of the guys that if he saw you around town, and he was always around town doing something, eating pizza or doing something, it would be, hey, James, how you doing? Or, hey, Mr. Hale, how you doing? I'd rather him call me James because I got to know him so well. And, there was never a time. I was told by fellow students, these are just average, not average, just students at OU, not athletes is what I mean, that he could be in a calculus room, and here he is as the only big-time football player there. The rest are academic, extraordinary people, and they would feel like he's their best friend. And that's not easy to do. Everybody knew Austin Box was a football player. He often wore that jersey around campus. His dream was to be a football player at Oklahoma, so as Brent Venables said, he was living the dream. But that was what's cool about him. they kind of did a spoof at the cable channel, and because Austin always wanted to do the weather. And so he shows up, they invite him, he's thrilled to do it, and he's hanging out with all these television guys, you know, student television people and radio people, and he's doing the weather, and he's screwing up, and they have all the cuts, you know, and all the, you know, and so eventually they put it all together, and it's funny to watch, but that's the kind of guy he was. You know, it's interesting. I think football is the most violent game in the world. I've got so many friends that play football, and I know the pain they live in, E. Maybe you live in pain, too, because you play basketball for so long. I think when you play athletics, your knees, your joints, your ankles, your hips, your shoulders, just different aspects, they start pounding on you because you, as athletes, start pushing yourselves and you push your body beyond the limits it can push. Then you add the compound the problem in football with the physical contact, and then you find out Austin Box actually broke his back in high school and recovered from that. And you have all these factors that he's dealing with, and he was living in tremendous pain. That's why I liked what, you know, when his pastor, Wade Burleson, said, until you walk in his shoes, you know, you shouldn't comment until you walk in his shoes and realize what he was going through. And I agree. We know that Austin was dealing with painkillers, and we also know even when he was dealing with painkillers, he was in a tremendous amount of pain. And it eventually caught up to him. I don't know exactly what happened on that day in that house. You hear all kinds of things. You can read the police report. You still don't know. You know, but I just know that a really good guy has been taken away from the program. This program has been rocked with that and the loss of Brandon Everidge. Everidge was the heart and soul of that football team from 2000 to 2004. And then Brent Venables lost his brother. And so you have all this tragedy that's going on, that's taking place within the program, and they're trying to withstand it. The good thing about it is, young people are resilient to a certain extent, and they have mourned. They will continue to mourn. They'll mourn next season. They'll try to use this as motivation. Watch, they'll either have 12 on their helmets, 12 on their shoulder pads, or Landry will have 12 and not have Jones on it. They'll do something to honor Austin because they want to keep his memory alive because Austin means so much to his team. And then at Brandon Everidge's funeral, E., some 44 football players showed up for that, and then his high school football team showed up for that. You know, he led his high school football team to a state title.
Wow.
They gave him a political funeral, welcome, I mean, you know, going away party because they had a horse-drawn carriage that they put the casket in and go into the cemetery. And that is just so cool that so many players came back. Bobby Jack Wright made the joke. He said, that's a heck of a football team in there. We should have just suited them up and gone and played somebody. You know, so... it has been a trying time this summer, and I think everybody's looking forward. Camp is over today. They'll take a deep breath. You know, the coaches will get about a month off, a month and a week or so, and I think they're looking forward to it, and I think the program needs to breathe again. You know, now that players are going through their off season and they're back doing that, you know, and I think that's certainly something that they'll get into at this point, and it's going to be interesting to see how all that handles next year.
James, all week long, you have been at camp, and as you said, you know, you've been spending time around the players, but talk to us about the coaching staff. I mean, have you had a chance to catch up with Coach Stoops, and how is he doing?
Well, they're doing fine. I mean, they have the Sooner Caravan that they're doing now, and they're doing fine. I mean, the coaches are having a good time. Like I said, I think they're ready for a break. People don't understand, coaching college football is an incredible grind. I mean, you're pushing it, you're driving it, you're recruiting all the time, you're dealing with your guys all the time. I mean, they need a break every once in a while, and I think they're all just due for a break. They all have their places they go. Some go to golf courses. Some go hiking in the mountains. Some do nothing but hang at home, you know, because they're traveling all the time anyway. Some reacquaint their kids and play ball with their kids. Most of this staff has all, you know, children that are playing ball and that kind of thing, and there's so many new little kids. Josh Heupel has a newborn and a two-year-old that's out there. She's a beautiful little girl. Brent Venables has two little girls in his life now to go with his boys. His boys are now, probably, 11 and 9 or something like that. Bob's twins are, you know, I think they're almost freshmen now. Or, yeah, they're 8th, 7th graders. I guess his little girl's almost a freshman. I mean, so all these, you're watching all these kids grow up, and I think most of the time they just get acquainted with them, you know. A lot of them are talking about going to baseball games. Jay Norvell has family in Milwaukee, so he can't wait to get up there to watch the Brew Crew, and so, you know, they try to live normal lives for about a month and a half.
I think that's one of the things that's impressed me when I've covered the Sooners in their opening game the last 2 years. You thumb through the media guide and you forget, you know, so many of these coaches, they have young families. Their kids aren't grown and out of the house.
No, and that's the biggest dilemma each coach has, because he just doesn't get to spend enough time with them. And that's why Coach Stoops is one of the best coaches to work for, because Coach Stoops makes it a point that they show up probably later than most staffs do. They show up at 8:30. I think it's 8:30 every morning. What Coach Stoops tells them is that you take your kids to school. So whenever you're done doing that, you show up at work. So I think they kind of get meetings going at 9. Now, they're very efficient, and when they're working, they're working. And then he wants them out of that office, he wants them at home, and time to put them to bed. Because he knows in today's time, you can take video recorder, you can take all that video stuff, and you can continue to watch after you put them to bed if you want to. And he wants you to go home and kiss your wife. I mean, you know, give him a hug. Give her a hug. Let her know that, you know, you still love her. You're still around her. And most of the time, I admire the coach's wives at OU and all that I've met, because I think it takes a special lady to be a coach's wife. And, you know, they know how to get their 5 minutes with their husband, you know what I mean? So they figure it out, and it takes a team to make that all work. But Bob really goes out of his way to set up a system where they still get to be around their families. And every Wednesday night is family night. Every Wednesday night, Bob pays for catering from some restaurant in the area, and they cater in all that food. And if you're able to go up there, all those kids are running around playing football, throwing balls. I mean, they're everywhere. And it's family night, and that's another cool thing that OU does.
And it certainly is a family atmosphere when you spend time up there in Oklahoma. But that's great to hear Coach Stoops doing that, because being a coach and trying to, you know, raise a family, the hours are crippling. I mean, we've heard that so many times, James.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a tough job. That's why I always give coaches the benefit of the doubt, because people don't understand the time constraints that they're in. Let's look at the summer. I mean, OU this weekend during camp, they've had several players come in that are high-profile recruits that they're recruiting. Unfortunately, they came through camp that they're going to be there. But over the next 6 weeks, you'll have other athletes that will come in. So here you're planning vacations, time off, games to go to with your children, shopping with your wife. You're just trying to hang out and be a normal person, and you get plans for the weekend. But on Wednesday, that number one prospect at your position says he wants to come down, that his family's bringing him down, and they want to look at the campus. And so all of a sudden, you got to change your plans, or you got to get somebody to fill in for you. So what OU has done, they kind of have two coaches on duty every weekend. You know, they just ask who's going to be around. Can you be on duty in case a recruit comes by or whatever, and that kind of thing. And that's kind of solved some of that problem. And they've rotated it around. But, you know, recruiting is 24/7, and you just never can underestimate the time constraints those coaches go through.
James Hale with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. James, quickly direct all of our listeners where they can go and find out all your information online.
OUinsider.com, and we're part of the 24/7 network. It's a new network that's growing by leaps and bounds. I think we're going to change the game, how it's played. And, you know, and we've been dealing in the internet business, Brian Bishop, myself, Dave Hunt, and some others for a long, long time. And I think people will enjoy it if you're an OU fan, or just a fan of college sports, or if you like college football recruiting. You know, that's kind of what we specialize in, and, you know, I think we do a good job up there.
You absolutely do. James, we want you to weigh in. Talk about the BCS's decision earlier this week to strip the national title from USC, and has Bob Stoops, what is he saying about this and his reaction?
Well, Bob's just saying, you know, Bob basically says, what else can you do? I mean, you can, you know, how else do you punish that team on that year? Because you can't ask for money back, and the players played, you know, you played the game, so what else can they do? They really can't do anything else. I mean, this is the only recourse they have. Unfortunately, what happens when a Reggie Bush causes problems, it's the current team that's many years down the road that suffers. They're the one that's on probation, and that's always been the case, and that's always been the shame of it. And it's obviously not been a deterrent in college sports that future teams are going to get in trouble. I mean, guys continue to do it. So I think Coach Stoops feels like this does punish athletes when their legacy is basically taken away. And a lot of people in today's media, and I think the fan base, feel like, hey, this doesn't bother Reggie Bush. Well, yeah, it does. He's had to get the Heisman back. They told him they don't want him around Southern Cal anymore. They've taken out all his pictures and all his trophies. And while there can be those that say, well, you know he played, you know he existed, you know he was there, you only know by memory. And after a while, what does time do? It fades that memory. And if you take all those accolades out and that trophy's no longer there, and that championship's no longer in the books, well, sooner or later, it makes a difference. And I think Bob believes that's as much a deterrent as anything, because every player, whether he's a starter, second-team guy, scout-team guy, he wants to leave some kind of legacy at that school. He wants to be remembered in some way. He wants somebody to remember him in some way. And when they can come back and they can see their name on that roster sheet, or when they can see their name, their picture on that wall or anything like that, that is usually a very positive thing. And he thinks that's the one deterrent that can really hurt guys, in that if you screw up, you're going to hurt the whole team, and the whole team's not going to be honored. And Coach Stoops feels like that's the best way to punish him. I don't know what else they can do, to be honest. You can't ask for money or anything else, so what else can you do?
Well, I wasn't so much necessarily thinking about USC, but I certainly, my heart goes out to the Sooners, and just what a, you know, I was there at that national championship game.
Yeah, and Reggie Bush was great in that game.
He was.
Reggie just wasn't great. Liner was great. Gates, the tight end, the defense that played. You know, the Sooners got pounded that day, and it wasn't just Reggie Bush. But that's the point. I've talked to Dan Cody. I've talked to Vince Carter. You know, I've talked to Roy Williams. I mean, I've talked to so many guys that played in that game, and they all say the same thing, that I've talked about that game. They've all said the same thing, that they wouldn't want that ring and they wouldn't want that trophy, and so they don't want anything to do with it. They lost that day, and they lost decidedly. Maybe they would feel different if it was 33-31 and Bush had scored the winning touchdown on an amazing run that he ripped through nine guys and dove into the end zone and barely got in by an inch or something, but that's not the way it was. And the way OU looks at that game, they laid an egg, they didn't play well, and if you're not going to give the championship to USC, you can't give it to OU.
Well, it certainly makes you wonder, you know, what's going to happen potentially with Auburn and, you know, all the controversy that's rolled around Cam Newton.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not one that tries to predict the future before I know it. So far, in my opinion, they haven't found anything that Cam Newton did. They found something his dad did. So what happens to Cam there? But if he never received any money, if it's just speculation and it's just talk, but no money ever changed hands, Cam Newton didn't do anything wrong. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know. I don't try to predict the future before I know it. I hope we don't have something come up 5 years, 6 years, 7 years down the road. And, you know, Auburn had a chance, if that does happen, they had a chance to ride it, because they had a chance to suspend him or take him off the roster when all this started. They didn't. They stuck behind him. So they're going to be behind him, win, lose, or draw.
Well, I know, James, you're not one to predict the future, but could you have ever anticipated what has unfolded, the scandal that has unfolded at Ohio State? I mean, Jim Tressel's turning in his resignation on Memorial Day, and now Terrell Pryor is hanging it up.
Well, what has happened to Jim Tressel has to scare every college football coach in America, because when you're sitting in your office and you get an email, you think, hey, nobody can read this email. This is my stuff. Hey, that text on my phone is my stuff. But what we all know now, because of the scrutiny that the university has over their employees and, you know, the Right to Know Act that we have in the media nowadays, if you're part of a government or a city agency, you know, you can ask for records. So that has to scare every college football coach in America. You know, but as long as that coach just does the right thing, anytime that you hear anything that's going on that you feel is not right, turn it in. If it costs you your best player, well, OU's done that once with Rhett Bomar, or one of their best players, and you know what? They survived. The Ohio State would have survived without Terrell Pryor. It's going to be hard to survive without their coach. And, you know, I think all coaches, you know, get caught up into things every once in a while when they deal with players. I think it's just second nature. You're trying to educate players, you're trying to help players. And what has happened here, especially when now people are digging into his phone records, into his emails, and now you got players coming forward, players that are disgruntled, players that didn't play. I mean, it becomes a mess. And if you can't stay on top of it and control it, this can happen to any program in the country. So I feel for Coach Tressel. He made a major blunder. He apparently is well-liked. He's apparently, you know, still going to be a popular coach there. But the guy, you know, and I feel for Terrell Pryor in that he screwed up. but he tried to live this system, just like Rhett Bomar did when he was at OU, outside the system. He tried to get perks outside the system. And I know these aren't the only two athletes that do that, but it's, you know, you got to play that game in such a fine line, and when you do, this is the risk that you run. And Terrell Pryor, I don't know if he'll ever be able to go back to Ohio State. He's not looked at in a favorable light at Ohio State, and he's not ready to be a pro quarterback either. The one thing he is, he's 6'3", 233 with 4.4 speed in the 40. So I hope he can translate that into something in the pro game, because out of all the players that knew they needed another year in college, he was one that readily admitted it. So it's going to be interesting. It's a tragedy. It really is. Ohio State's a great program, though, Ian. I don't know what the probation's going to be, but they'll be one of the programs that will be able to rebound faster than most.
James Hale weighing in and giving us his reaction as the drama continues to unfold at Ohio State. And I asked this question to Jason Peter last week. Jim Tressel, as you had just said, just a likable guy. So many guys have really come out to defend him. Will he be able to rehabilitate his image and perhaps at some point land on his feet again and get a Division I coaching job?
Well, not in my opinion. I mean, first of all, he's a little bit up there in age now. And
how old is Jim?
Isn't he 56?
You think that's over the hill?
I mean, but he's to that point that it's hard to go to Ohio State than go to somewhere else. I mean, where else do you go? You know, it's obviously going to be a program that's not Ohio State. And I think he's going to get some kind of penalty where, you know, he's got to have the right to show cause penalty from the NCAA. Because now they've uncovered things at Youngstown State and other places. And, I mean, this has been the worst nightmare for Coach Tressel. And to me, he's almost going to be better off if he just doesn't coach again. He's got plenty of money. Maybe he becomes a public speaker. I don't know. Maybe he gets into television somewhat and does something else. I don't know. I just don't ever see him coaching again. I don't know where you go from Ohio State and be happy where you're coaching at. That would be tough to do. And he's not going in his own realm. He's going in shame. I mean, he's hurt a program that, you know, is one of the great programs in college football, and it's going to be on his shoulders and his legacy. And even though he's got great fan support, that's not going to do anything for the school. They're still going to get pounded by the NCAA.
I know. I just can't imagine Coach Tressel, you know, leaving college football on such scandalous terms. And, you know, you would like to, you know, leave such a prolific career on a high note. And
how's he going to do it, though?
I know. That's a great question.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I hope he does. But how does he do it? Where does he do it? Where can he get a shot? I mean, you know, again, this is going to take 2 or 3 years off his coaching life right here. He's going to be dealing with this. And believe me, the NCAA is going to hit him with some kind of show cause penalty that, you know, before that he can get another job, he'll have to go in front of the NCAA and prove to them that he deserves to have another job. And most guys are out 5 years that get that penalty laid against them. I just, you know, the timing is just not good for him.
You're right. James, we're quickly out of time. Quickly, just give us a thought on how about those Mavs as they are headed to Miami?
Well, you know, they're playing great, aren't they? I mean, it's been a great series. I've loved it so far. Every game has been a tight ball game. You have the intrigue about this player's playing well, this player's not playing well. This player, you know, is talking trash, this one's not. I mean, it's been amazing. You know, I haven't missed a minute of it, so it's been fun. It really has, and I'm looking for 3 more good games.
Oh, it should be a lot of fun. James, listen, thanks so much for stopping by. We're way overdue, but we will catch up with you again real soon.
All right, look forward to it, E. Thanks.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Jason Peter will be with us in just a moment.